I was just thinking that these two verses from the seventh chapter, 175 and 176, are relating to this question also by Ramananda Sakha. It's on page 7 and 8 here. It says, due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of nature, material nature, thinks of himself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. So these material miseries are there, the threefold miseries. Miseries from the mind and body, miseries from other living entities, enemies fighting you, and then miseries from natural causes, you know, earthquakes and floods and fires. And so all these miseries are there for everyone, you know, and sometimes it appears that someone is more fortunate than another, but they're just at another place on this wheel that's going around and around. You know, one minute they're, you know, like they used to have in the Middle Ages, they would, in order to get people to confess, they would have, they put them on a wheel and they'd make them go underwater and hold them down for a while and then they would bring them back up. Okay, you ready to admit, you're ready to tell us what you want to hear, you know? They call it now, what do they call it? The Americans were using this technique of making people think they're drowning, pouring things on their face. I forget what it is right now, but it was a big issue in the last presidential campaign and all these things, you know, that they, in the war on terror, they were using techniques which are really torture techniques, even though we're supposed to not torture and whatever. I forget what it's called, but they hold people down. So one minute you say, oh, that person who's been dragged up above the river, oh, he's really enjoying, you know. But he's going to be back down again. But it's superfluous to us. This is the material existence is doing all that stuff. And if we can learn about the spiritual existence, then we don't have to take birth again. We can get off the wheel, you know. Rather than thinking, oh, the devotee, you know. But we shouldn't feel like we're doing our service in exchange for something. You know, we shouldn't feel that we're doing, and I've heard devotees feel like that. Well, I made so many sacrifices and I gave so many things to Krishna consciousness, and how come somebody else has got a big position in the movement but I don't, and you know, and whatever. And it's like, you know, you shouldn't be interested in those kind of things. You know, I mean, if someone has a big position, maybe they should, maybe they shouldn't, I don't know. But what does that have to do with you? You know, you should be happy by learning how to chant well. And if you learn how to chant well, it's worth giving up everything for that, you know. And if you don't learn how to chant well, whether you give it up or you don't give it up, what have you really got? You know, that's the teaching that Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we have a new book today. Green. I really don't like the colors that they have available at Kinko's. I was wanting to get some nice royal purple, you know, cover or something like that. But the cardstock was very limited to these day glow colors. And as we have the Chartreuse chapter 12. And so we're on verse 1 of chapter 12, entitled The Birth of Emperor Parikshit. Text 1. Shaunaka uvacha ashvatam no pashrishtena brahma shirshno rutejasa uttaraya hato garbha ishena jivatak punaha ashvatam no pasrishtena brahma shirshno rutejasa uttaraya hato garbha ishena jivatak punaha.
Shaunaka
uvacha.
Asvatthamno pasrushtena.
Ashvatthamno pasrushtena.
Brahma sirshonoru tejasa.
Brahma sirshonoru tejasa.
Uttaraya hato garbha.
Uttaraya hato garbha.
Isena jivitah punaha.
Isena jivitah punaha.
Asvatthamo prasishtena.
Asvatthamo prasishtena.
Brahma srishtro tejasa.
Brahma srishtro tejasa.
Uttaraya hato garbha.
Uttaraya hato garbha.
Isena dvita punaha.
Isena jivata punaha.
Shri Shaunak uvacha.
Shaunaka uvacha.
Ashvatthamno prasrishtena.
Ashvatthamno prasrishtena.
Brahma shirsheno tejasa.
Brahma shirshnoru tejasa.
Uttaraya hato garbha.
Uttaraya hato garbha.
Ishena jivita punaha.
Ishena jivita punaha.
Shaunaka uvacha.
Shaunaka uvacha.
Ashvatthamo pasrishtena.
Ashvatthamo pasrishtena.
Brahma shirshnoru tejasa.
Brahma shirshnoru tejasa.
Uttaraya hato garbha.
Uttaraya hato garbha.
Ishena jivita punaha.
Ishena jivita punaha. Yes, okay, that's why I didn't read it, yeah. It's Sanskrit, but it's Devanagari, it's the same alphabet, yeah. Yeah, it does say Sri Shaunak Uvacha.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Shaunaka Uvacha. The sage Shaunaka said, Ashvatthamna, of Ashvatthama, the son of Drona, Upasrishtena, by release of Brahmashirshna, the invincible weapon Brahmastra, Uru Tejasa, by high temperature. Uttaraya, of Uttara, mother of Parikshit. Hataha, being spoiled. Garbhaha, womb. Ishena, by the Supreme Lord. Ajivitaha, brought to life. Punaha, again. Translation, the sage Shaunaka said, the womb of Uttara, mother of Maharaj Parikshit, was spoiled by the dreadful and invincible Brahmastra weapon released by Ashvatthama. But Maharaj Parikshit was saved by the Supreme Lord. Please repeat. The sage Shaunaka said, the womb of Uttara, mother of Maharaj Parikshit, was spoiled by the dreadful and invincible Brahmastra weapon released by Ashvatthama. But Maharaj Parikshit was saved by the Supreme Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The sages assembled in the forest of Naimisharanya inquired from Suta Goswami about the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, but in the course of the narration, other topics like the release of the Brahmastra by the son of Drona, his punishment by Arjuna, Queen Kunti Devi's prayers, the Pandavas' visit to the place where Bhishma Dev was lying, his prayers, and thereafter the Lord's departure for Dwarka were discussed. His arrival at Dwarka and residing with 16,000 queens, etc., were narrated. The sages were absorbed in hearing such descriptions, but now they wanted to turn to the original topic, and thus the inquiry was made by Shonaka Rishi. So the subject of the release of the Brahmastra weapon by Ashwatthama is renewed. So that's, we went on this big cycle, and now they're coming back to when they left off. Back in the, I think it was the fourth chapter, is when they asked these questions about King Parikshit. Let me see. They first asked questions in the first chapter about, you know, ultimate duty, and especially in Kali Yuga when people's lives are short, you know, and there are so many scriptures, what's the essence, and, you know, where have the principles of religion gone? And then the narration was begun with the second and third chapter. And then in the fourth chapter, called The Appearance of Sri Narada, Shonaka then said, in what period and in what place? Oh, because the answer was given that Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishnesvatam upagate dharma jnana dibisaha. So Srimad Bhagavatam, all the principles of religion now reside in Srimad Bhagavatam. Kalo nashtra dashamesha purana arko denotitaha. Idam Bhagavatam nama puranam brahmasamitam uttama shloka charitam chakara bhagavanash. So he said, you know, it's all in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and by hearing this Srimad Bhagavatam, this kind of recitation, these sages are there and they're asking questions to Suta Goswami and he's responding and he's in rapt attention and they're in rapt attention. And this itself, this form of just listening to the narrations of Krishna consciousness, about Krishna consciousness, pure devotional service, spoken by a qualified person, this is itself bhakti yoga, and it's the highest. It doesn't require anything else. It doesn't require mental speculation. It doesn't require austerities or other kinds of processes. And so he's explained the Srimad Bhagavatam, and now they're asking about the Bhagavatam. Well, when was it spoken? In what period and at what place was this first begun? Why was this taken up? From where did Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, this great sage, get the inspiration to compile this literature? His, Vyasadeva's son, was a great devotee, an equibalanced monist whose mind was always concentrated in monism. He was transcendental to mundane activities, but being unexposed, he appeared like an ignorant person. While Srila Vyasadeva was following his son, beautiful young damsels who were bathing naked covered their bodies with cloth, although Sri Vyasadeva himself was not naked. But they had not done so when his son had passed. The sage inquired about this, and the young ladies replied that his son was purified, and when looking at them, made no distinctions between male and female, but the sage made such distinctions. This is the question. This Shonaka is starting to ask questions about how the Bhagavatam was first spoken, and he builds into his questions this glorification of the qualities of Shukadev Goswami. How was he, Srila Shukadev, the son of Vyas, recognized by the city and citizens when he entered the city of Hastinapur, now Delhi, after wandering in the provinces of Kuru and Jangala, appearing just like a madman, dumb and retarded? How did it so happen that King Parikshit met this great sage, making it possible for this great transcendental essence of the Vedas, Bhagavatam, to be sung by him? Let's see. It is said that Maharaj Parikshit is a great first-class devotee of the Lord, and that his birth and activities are all wonderful. Please tell us about him. He was a great emperor and possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? He was such a great emperor that all his enemies would come and bow down at his feet and surrender all their wealth for their own benefit. He was full of youth and strength, and he possessed insuperable kingly opulences. Why did he want to give up everything, including his life? Those who are devoted to the cause of the personality of Godhead live only for the welfare, development, and happiness of others. They do not live for any selfish interest. So, even though the emperor Parikshit was free from all attachment to worldly possessions, how could he give up his mortal body, which was the shelter for others? We know that you are expert in the meaning of all subjects. except some portions of the Vedas, and thus you can clearly explain the answer to all the questions we've just put to you. So then Suta Goswami started responding to that. In the course of the response, you know, he told about how Vyasadeva compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, how he was dissatisfied when he had compiled out the literature, Hare Krishna, and how Narada Muni came there and instructed him to describe pure devotional service and the activities of Krishna. And so he started to tell about the birth of Parikshit Maharaj and how Ashwatthama had tried to kill him and Krishna saved him in the womb. Then he told about how Ashwatthama was captured and punished and all these other narrations. It's good to, when we read the Srimad Bhagavatam, to read at least, to keep track of at least these three different levels. That's so they taught. In 1991, I went to Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education in Vrindavan, just for the Kartik semester. We took classes like different classes, but there was a core curriculum. Everybody had to take a Srimad Bhagavatam class and a Bhagavad Gita class. And the Bhagavad Gita class I took from Dhanurdhara Swami, and the Srimad Bhagavatam class I took from Brajabihari Das. And we read, not this chapter, but the very next chapter, Dhritarashtra Quits Home. Or maybe it's not the very next chapter. Yeah, I think it is the next chapter, the 13th chapter. But we learn there that we should, you know, we should focus on the verse and the purport that we're reading and, you know, what lesson is being taught in that verse and purport. But we shouldn't also lose the thread of the narration of you know, what the chapter is about and how it fits into the whole chapter and what that's, or the story that's going on. And then we shouldn't also lose track of the thread, the bigger thread of why this story is being told in the course of the whole Bhagavatam or in the course of this whole conversation, because there's all these conversations. Mostly it's Shukadeva Goswami telling Parikshit about the Bhagavatam, but then he also tells about some other conversation between, you know, Maitreya Muni and Uddhava, or between Narada Muni and Yudhishthir, or, you know, so there'll be, you know, conversations within conversations. But we should keep track of the lesson that we're learning, but then how is it related? What is part of it? What is the part? Why is it being narrated? You know, why this particular story? Sometimes one story will be just one chapter will be focused on one story. Sometimes a story like the story of Dhruva Maharaj or the story of Prahlad Maharaj and the appearance of Lord Nrisingadev, you know, will expand for more than one chapter. Or sometimes something will be within one chapter. But we can see these whole threads. So now, at this point, we're beginning a new chapter to talk again about Parikshit Maharaj. And I should just ask you all for your comments. What's special about Parikshit Maharaj? Why are we hearing about Parikshit Maharaj? And what are some of the qualities of Parikshit Maharaj? And we've already discussed some of it when the sages were talking and stuff like that, but why is it important? Why are we learning in the Srimad Bhagavatam, why are we learning about the history of the life of Parikshit Maharaj? So, everybody should say something.
He's a grandson of Arjun. His grandfather heard Bhagavad Gita from Lord Sri Krishna. So, he's hearing from Sukadeva Goswami, Srimad Bhagavatam.
Jai.
One thing which is very remarkable is that although he knew he had only 7 days to live, he chose to sit down and listen to the story. He was a king. He would have had thousands of things to take care of and his own family, but he didn't do that. And also very commendable was that after he had heard all this, his mother, who knew that the son was going to die, the first thing that the mother asked him was, you know, what did he say? What did Sukadeva Goswami say?
Oh, you're thinking of Brihad Bhagavatamrita also, yeah. He sat for the 7 days and seven nights without sleeping, without eating anything, without even drinking anything. His attention was that fixed. That's really remarkable. And we had that question from the sages. They would say, well, all right, so he's a liberated person and he doesn't want anything for himself. We can accept that. But why did he willingly give up his everything and give up even his body? Although he already was providing shelter to so many people as the king. But now by hearing this Bhagavatam, he's given something more, right? More valuable, that this, now we have the Srimad Bhagavatam, just like Arjuna also. You might say Krishna arranged that whole war as a setting. Of course, he was killing so many people and things like that, but he was arranged it as a perfect setting for speaking Bhagavad Gita so we can all hear it. And Bhagavad Gita is also a kind of Bhagavatam because it's spoken by Bhagavan. And then this Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken just about Bhagavan. So it's also the two kinds of Bhagavatam. So, okay. Did you have a comment? No? Someone else have a comment? Sri Krishna Purushottam.
Yeah. After the Kurukshetra War, Parikshit Maharaj, he's the only descendant of Pandavas that was left, but he was still in the womb. And even in that condition, Aswatthama attempted to kill him, and he was saved by Lord Krishna personally within the womb of Uttara. When Lord Krishna saved him, Parikshit Maharaj saw Lord Krishna, his form there. And after he was born, he was always looking for, you know, where is this person who saved me from that danger. So he was always observing. That's how he was named Parikshit, means he's observing who is my savior.
Yes, so we should always be inquiring also, where is Krishna? Is this Krishna? Is this person just told me something? Can I see some message of Krishna in that? Because he was saved, even as a fetus in the womb, he saw Krishna. So then he couldn't stop but thinking about Krishna and always examining, where is Krishna?
When Parikshit Maharaj went too far, in the forest, for he was starving for water, and he put a snake on the rishi, right? And his son cursed him to 7 days. At the time of death, people will suggest so many things, and in Parikshit Maharaj is the lord of the universe, means he is the emperor of the universe, and so many people came to him and suggested so many things, but since he is a Krishna pure devotee. And he went to Naimasaranya and sat for 7 days.
Hastinapur.
Hastinapur. Yeah. But the place is still there, I heard, Prabhuji.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. So he heard all this from this.
The interesting thing is they say he's on the bank of the Ganges, but Hastinapur is on the Jamuna today. Delhi is on the Jamuna. So it's always confusing. Why is it they call it? I think they just called it the Ganges in those days. Both Jamuna and Ganges were called Ganges. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry. So I think Parikshit Maharaj is put a role model for us, like to listen the pastimes of the God at the time of death. Not only at the time of death, but when you practice it, it will come at your mind when you. Time of death.
So yeah, he's the hearer. He's the exemplary hearer of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he shows us how we should follow his example to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he didn't have to accept the curse of the Brahmin. It was an unjust curse. He could have counteracted it. But he accepted it as the will of the providence, you know, the Supreme, so that he could show an example. We were talking about why do devotees suffer? Well, they can show how to accept one's suffering, because suffering is inevitable if you have a material body, but it's not really you, so you can accept it for a higher purpose. In this case, the purpose of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. He's also important that in the Bhagavatam, the narration of the punishment and reward of Kali Yuga is there. Parikshit Maharaj was the grandson of Arjuna, the emperor of the world, and Krishna had installed this dynasty to rule the world, and he was an excellent, perfect devotee. So we have an example of good government. Srimad Bhagavatam is not a treatise on government. It's about pure devotional service. But all these other things, everything else that people are interested in, like what sells newspapers, people are often talking about business, politics, human interest stories, and economic development, also the arts and entertainment section, you know, what's going on, sports, right? So these things are all there, all the things that human beings are interested in, and what kind of, you know, movies they want to hear, romance movies, horror movies, action movies, comedies, and, you know, so all different kinds of, there's different genres and things, documentaries, history, things. So all this is being told in Srimad Bhagavatam from the point of view of pure devotional service. And what better way to show a pure devotee king who is an excellent administrator, who had a perfect government, and then they're telling him, well, how did he deal with the changing time? That Krishna had gone from the earth, and when Krishna went from the earth, the age of Kali Yuga started, of quarrel and hypocrisy started. And how did the king prevent... Was he a protector of cows? Yes, Parikshit Maharaj was a great protector of cows. When he saw a cow was being tortured in his kingdom, who was actually Mother Earth in the form of a cow, then he came and stopped that. And then he, so that's also, that narration will be there. So all these things we're going to be hearing about within the remainder of the first canto. So that by the end of the first canto, Parikshit Maharaj will be there, Shukadev Goswami will be there, the discussion between them is about to start, and Parikshit Maharaj asks the question then, you know, what is the duty of a human being, and especially one who is about to die?
I was listening to His Holiness Indranum Swami Maharaj, one lecture probably, and he was saying, we need to be very grateful to the sages. Like at the beginning of Kali Yuga, they met together and they discussed about these pastimes, then only we came to know right now, and mm-hmm. we are leftovers, he's saying.
Yeah.
So we are leftovers of Kali Yuga. We should be very, very grateful to the Naimisaranya sages. They
yes.
discussed what is the essence of the life, and without these sages, we have Bhagavatam now. And
yeah. The sages are always concerned to protect the people and their... So here they were performing this big yajna to counteract the effects of Kali Yuga. But it wasn't working so well until they heard this narration. And all of this was compiled by Vyasadeva. Even this discussion of the sages in Naimisharanya and Suta Goswami, and then Suta Goswami is telling about what Shukadeva Goswami said. Suta Goswami was there, and he was disciple of, I think, of also Vyasadeva, but of Shukadeva Goswami, and he heard that discussion, and then he's repeating it. So, but all that is part of the 18,000 verses that Vyasadeva has compiled as the Srimad Bhagavatam. So even, it's funny, because even within that, there's a discussion of how he was told to compile it. But then he compiled even that discussion too.
That's my question, because this discussion, within his compilation, the discussion between Suta Goswami, Sukadeva Goswami, all those things, they happened afterwards. So, correct, right? The actual... So what I'm trying to say is Vyasadeva foresaw everything that's... Because when he wrote, when the sages of Naimisharanya were discussing the Bhagavatam, that means Bhagavatam was already written at that time itself. But within that Bhagavatam, there is a discussion of what the sages of Naimisharanya discussed.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. It could be several different things. I mean, one thing is Vyasadeva knows past, present, and future. So he might have composed these verses even before because he knew what was going to happen. But it also, you know, Bhagavatam is originally is just these seeds. As described in Bhagavatam itself, these four verses, or not four, but Yeah, mainly four verses that we recited this morning. From the second canto, Lord Brahma spoke to, I mean, Krishna spoke to Lord Brahma. Aham evasam evagre nanyad yat sarasatparam paschadaham yadetachcha yovishisheta sosmiham tatertanya pratieta na pratieta chatmani tadvidyaratmano mayang yatabhaso yatatamaha. Yatha mahanti bhutani bhuteshu chavacheshwanu prabhishtanya prabhishtani tatateshu niteshwaham. Yeah, I can offer the puja. Etavadeva yigyasyang tatvajigyasunatmanaha anvayavyatirekabhyam yatsyat sarvatra sarvata. So these four verses, that's also Bhagavatam. That's the original Bhagavatam, is these four seed verses. It was spoken by Krishna to Lord Brahma in the second canto, in the chapter called Answers by Citing the Lord's Version, I think. And then it all expanded from there. So the Bhagavatam that, you know, Vyas taught to Shukadeva Goswami, then Shukadeva Goswami spoke it to Parikshit Maharaj. It might not have, we don't hear that Shukadeva Goswami told Parikshit Maharaj about the sages of Naimasharanya and that discussion in Sutta Goswami. Although he did tell something, yeah, we do hear in the tenth canto, he told about Sutta Goswami's father, Ramaharshan, and how Balaram killed him with the kusha grass because he didn't respect the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was sitting on the Vyasasan and thought he didn't understand that just by being the guru doesn't mean that you are superior to the Personality of Godhead when he comes. So you still have to stand up. So then he killed him, and then the sages were upset because they had already promised him that he would have a long life. They had given him a benediction. So Balaram said, well, I can bring him back to life if you want. I can do anything. But they said, no, because you're God and whatever you do is wonderful, so we don't want you to change it, but we want you to make our benediction to him still, you know, true, and, you know, give it effect. You know, so that would seem impossible. How can you do that if he's killed him? So we don't want you to undo the killing of him, but we want you to also give effect to our blessing that he would live a long time. And Balaram said that his son, Sutta Goswami, could have that blessing. And then Ramaharshan could live through his son a long time, and this would be good. Then they also had some demons for him to kill, and some big demon was bothering their sacrifice, and he killed the demon. So that's discussed. Yeah, it could be either that Vyasadeva composed these verses about the sages of Naimasharanya before they happened, or it could be that he composed the Bhagavatam, spoke it to Shukadeva spoke it to Parikshit Maharaj, and then Sutta Goswami described that recitation to the sages in Naimasharanya, and then Vyasadeva, thereafter wrote down everything that Sutta Goswami said, along with the invocation, the first three verses are before the sages of Naimasharanya. I mean, there's three verses sort of as Mangalacharanam, and then it says Naimashak Nimashak Shetre, you know, so. Anyway.
How much is the time gap between Sukhdev Goswami telling that to Parikshit Maharaj and the Shaunak Rishi talking about that at Naimasharanya? Is it a long gap, like?
Well, I don't know, because the sages were doing a sacrifice for 1,000 years.
Yeah, at the beginning of Kali
Yuga. At the beginning of Kali Yuga, they were doing a 1,000-year sacrifice. So they had come together to do 1,000 years. And in the Dwapara Yuga, then people would live 1,000 years long, you know.
Right.
Even in the Bible they have that. The Old Testament, they're all 900 years, 800 years old and stuff like that. So that was 5,000 years ago. That's how long they would live. So they were doing that for 1,000 years. So I don't know. I don't particularly... There might be some clue in there, but I don't particularly remember hearing, you know, whether this... I mean, Balaram did install Sutta Goswami, you know, in the 10th canto. So that was before or during the time that the Kurukshetra war was going on. I mean, around that time is when, okay, the battle itself was 18 days, but there was, you know, some time leading up to it or something that Lord Baladev said, I'm not taking part in this. And he went on pilgrimage, and he went to all these different places. So he must have been gone a while, you know. Huh?
A lot of South India.
Yeah, he went all across the temples in South India. And he also went to Naimasharanya and killed Ramaharshan and installed his son, Sutta Goswami. So that took place, you know, certainly before... the disappearance of Lord Krishna, the Moksha Lila, and things. I don't know. We always think it. You know, we're so trained in our, you know, Western culture. We're so trained to put everything in chronologically in these kind of boxes. And of course, these narrations don't go that way because they're more arranged about subject matter and things. But it's a good idea to do. I mean, it really did have a chronology. And I just don't actually know the answer whether, you know, it could be that, I mean, Parikshit Maharaj heard from Shukadeva Goswami after the Pandavas had retired, after Lord Krishna had disappeared, after Parikshit Maharaj ruled the earth for some time. And then how long after that did the sages actually discuss this? Because Sutta Goswami does say that he was there. You know, he says in first canto, you know, I was there when Shukadeva Goswami spoke to Parikshit Maharaj, and now I'm going to tell you what they said. And he's described as the eldest living Vedantist. So, you know, whether it was 300-400 years later or whether it was just, you know, 6 months after Shukadeva Goswami said it, that much, there may be a clue in there somewhere, but I've never heard the answer to that question. I never heard that particular question.
And the reason I was asking that question was not more from the, to understand the chronology and the dates, etc. I was just thinking from the point of view of when was it written down, and whether there were updates to the documents. I was thinking if it was, you know, there was a time when people didn't need documentation because the minds were so, you know, so sharp, they could remember everything.
Yeah.
And I was wondering whether this was written down because we were going to come with, you know, lesser brains and lesser powerful brains. So maybe for
there still are there still are people who know the entire 18,000 verses.
Yeah.
Indrajumna Swami was saying he met one man who could, he knew in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know. And certainly Bhagavad Gita is just like one little book of, you know. And he met, you know, he said, all right, do you know this verse, you know, and the person could recite any verse, you know. And so it used to be that way, whether it was written down. And the one question is, you know, if everybody, and it's nice that you have them in poetry like this, in metric poetry, so that you can remember it and remember it perfectly and recite it, and it's meant to be sung. And
this question also, Prabhu, always, like, Madhvacharya is also a disciple of Vyasadeva. And Madhvacharya appeared before, I think, before Ramanujacharya. I'm not sure, Prabhu. Vyasadeva having different disciplic succession due to the, like, you know, Vyasadeva is Shakta, avatar of Krishna, right? So, and I don't know, he's living for a long time in Himalayas, and then he's having different age of disciples.
Yeah, he's there now in the Himalayas. There are people living now that will come out again when such a yuga happens and stuff. Vyasadeva, he took his... One time somebody asked me, why is he called Dvaipayana? Right? Krishna Dvaipayana, Vyas. And I didn't know. In this class one time, like last year or something, then I asked somebody, and it's because he was born on an island, Dvipa. So he was Dvaipayana. He was born on an island. So that's described in the first canto. Sutta Goswami says that Vyasadeva was born in the, you know, there's different sandhyas of each yuga. They're divided into three parts. So he was born in the third part of the Dwapara Yuga, and the verse says that the Dwapara and Treta Yuga were switched. In the 28th cycle of Vaivasvata Manu, ordinarily there's Satya Yuga and then Dwapara Yuga and then Treta Yuga and then Kali Yuga. Ordinarily that's the way it goes. But this time the Treta Yuga came before Dwapara Yuga. So that... that's mentioned in that verse, and Srila Prabhupada explains it in the purport. But so he was born in a particular time, you know, that during the third, so, you know, sometime, you know, 6,000, 7,000 years ago or whatever, you know, during the third, during the last third of the last yuga. And then, but now he's still alive, and he's living up in Badrinath, Badrika Ashram. But normally you can't see him. But Madhvacharya, he could see him, you know, and actually studied his Bhagavad Gita commentary directly with Vyasadeva and stuff. I don't know whether that was before, that was probably before, I think you're right, before Ramanujacharya. Vishishta Advaita. All right, so Dvaita, Vishishta Advaita, then Shuddha Advaita.
Advaita, Dvaita, Vishishta, Vishishta Advaita.
Vishishta Advaita.
Okay, Vishishta.
Vishishta, it's purified non-dualism.
Yeah.
I mean, it's qualified non-dualism. And then Shuddha Advaita is purified dualism. And anyway, these are the different slogans of the different Vaishnava schools. So Ramanujacharya comes from Lakshmi Devi's Sampradaya. And Madhvacharya comes from Lord Brahma Sampradaya. Then Vishnu Swami and Nimbarka. So Nimbarka, I don't know who comes from Rudra Sampradaya. I think Nimbarka comes from the four Kumaras and Vishnu Swami comes from Rudra Sampradaya. And Vallabhacharya today, the Pushti Marga people, they come in that Rudra Sampradaya. And I don't know where the Four Kumara Sampradaya is today. I'm sorry, we're digressing. Anyway, so it should be time to do Guru Puja. If there's any more questions about Parikshit Maharaj or what we'll be... Will be for the next, you know, 36 weeks or so. Hearing about Parikshit Maharaj, his qualities, more about the history of the kings in the Kshatriya dynasties, and about the punishment and reward of Kali. Well, that's going to come in later chapters, but maybe a little bit here. But you know. We'll hear about some of the qualities of Parikshit Maharaj. And the excellent, you know, what are the qualities of a good king and a good government? That's important too. You know, Parikshit Maharaj was able to keep, you know, intoxication, gambling, illicit sex, and meat eating out of his kingdom. And then it was therefore prosperous. I know now they have on the ballot the marijuana legalization, and there's all these arguments for and against, and you know, and I could see good arguments on either side. It would be better if they could somehow or another suppress it so that nobody was smoking it or using it in different ways. They tried to make it illegal in the United States. They tried to make it illegal for alcoholic beverages, but it didn't work very well. But I think, personally, I think they should keep marijuana illegal. You know, if they make it legal, kids will do it, and more. They're already doing it, but they'll do it more. But the alcohol, we shouldn't give up. We shouldn't think, they'll never be able to make alcohol or do away with alcohol. Or, you know, if we can culturally make it not attractive to people, you know, if they tried to make it against the law, it would be kind of a thing, you know, gangsters would develop and all this, you know, all these things happen. It was good that they tried to stop alcohol consumption, but it was perceived as an ethnic thing, you know, like some groups had immigrant groups had a very much part of their culture that they would drink alcohol for different festivals and things like that, and or they were very much accustomed to it, and it was seen as like these waspy people were trying to be prohibition of alcohol, and then the Germans had their beer and the Italians had their wine and stuff like that, and it became a difficult thing in the 1920s in the United States, and they tried to stop the alcohol, or was it? Yeah, I think it was mostly the 20s, and then. I don't know. You know, King Parikshit Maharaj was able to not just make it illegal, but he made it unheard of. You know, nobody would kill any animal. There was no meat eating, at least no killing of animals, in his kingdom. You know. Like they say, Las Vegas is Sin City. You know, all the things are there in great quantity. But not just there, all over the United States now. Anyway, Parikshit Maharaj ki jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Haribol.